This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Below the level of our sight, molecules of toxic chemicals are swirling around the world. Others arrive as consumer products in our kitchens and even baby toys. Elizabeth Grossman is an investigative journalist. Her new book is Chasing Molecules, Poisonous Products, Human Health, and the Promise of Green Chemistry. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
And thank you so much for having me.
Your new book is creating waves in the mainstream media and the blogs. I've seen it in net forums. Why so much interest in the safety of consumer products now?
Well, I think we've become increasingly aware over the past 10 years or so, and even more in the past 2 or 3 years, that industrial sites, waste sites, factories, smokestacks, they're not the only sources of hazardous pollutants in our lives, and that, in fact, these kinds of chemicals are migrating out of products that absolutely permeate our lives.
Well, before we dig in a little deeper into that, can you give us just one example of a household product that emits dangerous chemicals?
Well, when you say the word emitting makes it sound like it's a pulsating beam, and I'm always really careful not to alarm people unduly, but virtually all the plastics that house electronics that might have been made in the past 3 or 4 years, and most upholstery that is of a similar age, all of those contain what are called brominated flame retardants, substances that have been put into those upholstery foams and plastics to prevent them from bursting into flame in case of fire. And it turns out that those chemicals, molecules of those chemicals, actually leave the products over time and under normal use. And testing that's been done by the Centers for Disease Control and numerous other agencies, organizations, medical groups have found that these chemicals are entering both household dust and our bodies and our food.
Yes, I've seen a program where famous people, big politicians and rock stars or whoever, have had their bloodstreams checked and they find 60 or 80 synthetic chemicals in them. We've all got them then.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, the Centers for Disease Control here in the U.S. has been doing testing like this over the past 10 years and has consistently found dozens and dozens of different industrial chemicals, that a lot of which are emanating from household products. And in fact, the Environmental Working Group, an NGO in the U.S., released a report just last week where they had tested newborn babies' blood, and they had found, again, scores of chemicals in these infants' blood.
I'm interested that you brought that up, because on Radio EcoShock, I ran a feature on the work of Dr. Francisca Ferreira of the Columbia Milman School of Health, and she was able to prove scientifically that toxic molecules were penetrating the womb barrier of pregnant women, actually changing the DNA before birth. So are scientists wondering whether this could be adding to the rise in some health problems?
Yes, and in fact, the evidence is now overwhelming that environmentally available pollutants, the kind of chemicals we've just been talking to, are entering our bloodstreams and our bodies often before birth, and they are affecting particularly the hormonal systems, these very delicately balanced feedback systems that control virtually all our really vital body systems, metabolism, reproduction, development, neurological function, and all of the scientists I talked to for this book have said that based on everything they've seen, there is reason to be concerned that this kind of chemical exposure is indeed having an effect on the health of the public at large. And just in the past month, the American Medical Association adopted a scientific statement that was released earlier this year by the Endocrine Society saying that these kind of chemicals really should be decreased wherever possible, and we really should limit people's exposure to them.
Wow. So, but aren't these products regulated and tested by the government somehow?
Well, yes And no, and that's one of the great difficulties. Right now, there are over 80,000 industrial chemicals, chemicals that are registered to be used in commerce in the U.S., and we have a very cumbersome system of going and looking at them in detail. So while all manufacturers do some testing of these products, the kind of testing that has routinely been done does not capture all of the environmental and biological impacts that these chemicals might have, and the kind of hormonal effects, what are called endocrine disrupting effects we were just talking about, they are not routinely tested for at all. And in fact, under the rules we have in the U.S., the EPA has only been able to compel regulated thorough testing on about 200 of these 80,000 chemicals.
And how long do they last in the environment?
Well, it depends on the chemical. Here in the U.S. and in Canada, elsewhere around the world, we've been hearing a lot about a chemical, for example, called bisphenol A, which is the building block of polycarbonate plastics, the stuff that goes into those nice, lightweight, shatterproof, shiny water bottles we've been using. And that chemical is what scientists refer to as pervasive because it's everywhere. We use it just in so many plastic products and paper coatings, and it lines food cans, beverage cans. It's really everywhere in our lives. But it does not last a very long time in the environment, but we're exposed to it all the time. On the other hand, something like the brominated flame retardants I refer to, or the chemicals that make up nonstick surfaces in cookware. Also, similar chemicals make stain-resistant surfaces and grease-repellent coatings. Those can last a really, really long time. Bits of them can last not just for days or weeks, but for months and possibly even years.
Now, in your book, Chasing Molecules, you describe going to a very remote Aboriginal settlement in Alaska. Why did you go there?
Well, I went to that community on St. Lawrence Island, and it's what we'd call a subsistence community here in the U.S. There are only two tiny villages on this island that is in Norton Sound off the west coast of Alaska. And one of the reasons I went is because the Arctic has become what scientists refer to as a sink for this kind of persistent chemical pollution, because everything that's released in the northern hemisphere that gets into atmospheric air currents or even into the oceans, eventually, if it lasts long enough, it will go north. And these kind of chemicals are collecting in the Arctic, and some of the highest levels that have been found in wildlife have been found in top Arctic predators like polar bears. They've had some of the highest levels of these nonstick, what are called perfluorinated compounds. And the community I went to visit is suffering from that kind of environmental pollution, but they also have pollution closer to home. They were a site for a number of years for defense operations, and when the military left, an enormous amount of hazardous chemical waste was left behind. So they've got kind of a double or triple whammy going on in terms of this kind of chemical impacts. I also went there because one of the things that's been discovered is that climate change, global warming, is creating conditions that seem to be exacerbating the impacts of this chemical pollution.
How does that happen?
Well, when stuff goes north and ends up in the Arctic, under normally cold conditions, anything that gets way up north and gets into ice and snow and permafrost, sea ice, it would be held in place simply by virtue of being frozen. As temperatures warm and the permafrost melts, sea ice melts, there's more wet precipitation instead of sort of drier snow, these chemicals are being released. The other thing some scientists have been finding is that as warming changes where Arctic polar animals have to go to look for food, they have to travel further, or because things are not arriving at the same time, they're burning more of their fat stores. And a number of these chemicals accumulate in fat. So when the animals burn their fat, they're releasing along with the energy some of the chemicals that have accumulated in their fat.
It's a kind of self-poisoning.
Exactly.
Well, You know, it's hard to imagine that there's this unseen layer of microscopic dust traveling around the globe. I've seen close-up photos of that dust, like soot from coal plants, for example, and those little particles, they look like tiny asteroids with many surfaces. And you're saying that any number of chemicals, including pesticides, hitchhike around the world unseen by any of us?
They do, and that's part of the reason why for this book I ended up trying to go places where these chemicals are going, because it is really hard to wrap your mind around this because you really can't see it. I was lucky enough to be able to go along with scientists on a couple of international polar year expeditions where all sorts of climate change research is being done, but also research into tracking these moving pollutants. And one of the really extraordinary things I got to see was some mapping that's now being done, not necessarily of these persistent chemical pollutants, but some of the other air pollutants that travel along with them, so that you could actually see these sort of colored pictures of plumes of chemical pollution. It was pretty amazing.
There are streams, it's like rivers of dust up in the atmosphere, way up and low down as well. Well, you know, we talked about babies in the womb, but then it doesn't stop there. What's the problem with children's plastic toys?
Oh, children's plastic toys. I was just on the Consumer Product Safety Commission website yesterday looking at their list of recalled products, and it's pretty disheartening. The problem with children's toys, essentially, for a lot of them, is we just don't know what's in them, and that problem's not necessarily limited to toys, but so many of these toys are made with plastics that we really don't know their origin. Very often the manufacturers that have made your little explorer toy or action figure, little baby dinosaur toys, they're not 100% aware of the materials that they're using, where they came from. They're coated in paints that can have, unfortunately, lead or other heavy metals in them. And some of these toys are made with plastics that have kinds of plasticizers in them, things that make the base material flexible and bendable, particularly a category of chemicals with a funny name called phthalates, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. And it turns out those also migrate out of the finished product, and they too have been identified as endocrine disruptors.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We're talking with Elizabeth Grossman, author of the new book, Chasing Molecules. Elizabeth, you won't use Teflon frying pans. Why not?
Oh, well, I have this pan that I actually really, really like, and I stare at it kind of sadly, wondering, well, should I give it away, or is that bad too? I started reading about the chemicals that are used in Teflon. Is a kind of a generic term, though it's a brand name, these kind of non-stick surfaces which are made up of chemicals based on fluorine chemistry. And when I read that these chemicals were turning up in polar bears and in sea turtles and having some seriously disturbing health impacts in terms of suppressing their immune system and leading to certain kinds of tumors and other health disorders, I just thought, oh, I really, really don't want to use those pans. And I started trying to find out what was in alternative pans that said they were non-stick but didn't have, quote-unquote, Teflon in them. And the short story is that because our laws are such that they really, really respect proprietary information from industries for all sorts of reasons, some of them probably very good and helpful if you're in business, we just don't know what's in this stuff. So I decided if I couldn't find out what it was, I was going to stick to my nice ceramic and cast iron pans.
Seems like a good solution. And really, we don't have to use these horrible chemicals that seep into our bloodstream. That's the good news part of your book, The Green Chemistry. Can you tell us about advances made to find safe replacements?
Yeah, I mean, there is now a movement, it's been around for about 10 years, but it's really just starting to get traction now, called green chemistry. And the basic idea behind that is that the best way of preventing chemical pollution, and therefore any of the health hazards that would come along with it, is by designing materials that are inherently environmentally benign and that are safe at every stage of that product's life, whether it's in the lab, during manufacturing, when the product's being used, or even when it might be disposed of or recycled. And this seems really simple, but it actually represents a pretty significant departure from how chemistry has been practiced commercially. Green chemistry is asking us to ask questions about environmental and health impacts of products at a point in design that simply haven't been asked before.
So if people get your book, are they going to be able to figure out better solutions for themselves?
Well, I will admit that my book was not intended to be a how-to, but one of the things I hope it will do is really make people aware that there are some absolutely extraordinary and dynamic scientists at work really hard on creating new, safe materials, and that this movement towards requiring materials to be safe is gaining some serious political traction, both in terms of what consumers are demanding and now in terms of what policymakers are asking. So I hope it will help people understand the problem and also how we're trying to solve the problem.
Yeah, I wonder, is the answer to try and go at it at the government level with regulations, or is it for consumers to say, I'm just not going to buy that product anymore? I mean, it's a little discouraging, I have to tell you, because I know people who devoted their lives in the 80s and 90s to some of these chemicals. We know about them, and yet we just keep on making them. What can we do?
I think the problem has to be gone at both ways. To a certain extent, in the past couple of years, I have to say it's kind of encouraging how fast the market is responding to consumers. Just take those polycarbonate water bottles, for example, and those plasticizers that are so prevalent in children's products. Just in the past couple of years, largely through consumer demand, enormous retail chains have just said, okay, we're not carrying this kind of chemical plastic product, particularly in children's products. So the market is actually moving fairly quickly. That said, I think we really do need some new regulations that will keep the most harmful chemicals out of products, and simply because voluntary things never work fast enough, I don't think. And I think we also need to make sure that the public has much better information than we do now under our current regulatory system.
And what have I left out? Is there something else you'd really like to tell our listeners as we wrap up here?
Well, I think one of the messages to take away from all of this is that it can be really, really overwhelming when you think about how many synthetic chemicals there are in all of our products. I asked virtually everybody I interviewed, what do you do? What do you recommend? And everybody said, don't panic. Be strategic, make choices that are going to have the most impact in your life. If you have small children, babies, you know, make certain choices, keep the stuff away from food. And the other big message, I think, is that we really need to make sure that safe products are easily and affordably available for everyone, that they're just the norm, and it's not something that you need a PhD and lots of spare time to try and figure out.
Yes, we could have a much less toxic world. Do you have a website for your book or some website you want to point out?
I do. Island Press, who's my publisher, has a website for the book. It's pretty simple. It's chasingmolecules.org, and there's love to have people take a look at that.
All right. This is Radio EcoShock from Portland. We've been speaking with Elizabeth Grossman, whose new book is popping up everywhere. It's called Chasing Molecules, Poisonous Products, Human Health, and the Promise of Green Chemistry, and it is published by Island Press. Thank you for all that good info, Elizabeth.
And thank you.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.